Support for Connecticut East this week comes from Newport Mansions, preserving and presenting 11 historic properties and landscapes, exemplifying three centuries of achievements in American architecture, decorative arts, and landscape design, spanning the colonial era to the Gilded Age. Tickets and information at newportmansions.org. SCAD, the Southeastern Council on Alcoholism and Drug Dependence, is offering a $3,500 sign-on bonus for licensed clinicians. Go to LicenseClinicians.org to learn more. That's LicenseClinicians.org. And Service Master by Mason, experts at eliminating harmful mold and mildew from your home or business. Don't let mold damage your property and cause health concerns. Call 860-455-1249. There were around 310 reports of it in 2023 alone. We're talking about sex trafficking, and it's happening right here in Connecticut. We talked to two nonprofits about the problem and how they and others are trying to combat it. Plus, we take a look at other stories making the headlines from around the region. This is Connecticut East This Week. Hello, I'm Brian Scott Smith. It's not a subject you often hear talked or reported about here in Connecticut or the US, human trafficking or sex trafficking, but it's happening. And since the COVID-19 pandemic, according to the FBI and DCF, it's been spiking around the nation and here in the state. As more people communicate anonymously using social media and phone apps, young people are being pulled into a dangerous and dark world of exploitation, which their parents often have no idea about. Here in Eastern Connecticut, the problem has been getting worse over the last year, and I sat down with Jill Burbo of the nonprofit Teague and Rebecca Taser from United Services Inc., who have both come together to combat the problem by visiting young people in local schools to talk to them about the issue. We start the interview with Jill, who explains her role.
I am the youth programs manager here at Teague. About 5 years ago, we became a YSB, which is a youth service bureau, and have really developed our programming to start servicing all the youth that are in our three towns that Teague normally services, but we also added in Putnam to that.
And Rebecca, same thing. You're involved with youth programs, but you're involved with another organization called United Services Inc. So can you just quickly explain your role as well, please?
So I'm the youth service bureau coordinator for United Services, and a lot of what I do is anything youth prevention related. Often it's case management in regards to truancy and defiance of school rules. I run a lot of after school youth programming, and I also help out with a program called Teen Outreach Program, and that's helping youth connect with their community and see the validity in being a part of their community.
So today we're talking about a specific topic. We're talking about human trafficking, and I'm going to ask Jill in a moment for you to give us what that definition is, because I think people have an idea in their head what they think that means, mm-hmm. and it isn't, is it?
No, it's not. So that brought us to wanting to be here to talk about it and to receive the curriculum that Becca and I went to receive. So human trafficking, at the general term of it, is split up into two different categories, sex trafficking and labor trafficking. So you can be trafficked either by work or for sex. The sex trafficking is unfortunately what I was seeing the most of probably about a year ago with our youth. And that's what brought me into doing some investigation and looking into Love 146, as they are one of the leading preventions for it and supports for it in our nation.
It sounds astounding. And I'm saying this with absolute incredulity. I've not, as a journalist, heard about human trafficking here in Connecticut, which I find for myself appalling as a journalist, because we're supposed to have our finger on the pulse of things that's happening. How big an issue is it?
So I felt just like you. I was sitting there talking with students about things that had nothing to do with trafficking, and then hearing little bits and pieces that just didn't seem right about things that they were doing or things that they were being asked to be done or where they were spending their time on the weekends. And it was kind of alarming to me, and I'm like, this is not right. So it took investigation. It took thought. It took looking into a few times that it started, like through some involvement with some gangs, right? So I don't know a lot about gang behavior. So I'm like, maybe I'm looking in the wrong direction. And then it came down to the fact that it was trafficking. Right now for us, it is kind of blowing up big time. So we had, as of last year when I started this, started seeing cases. So suspected cases is usually what you're talking about when you're talking about trafficking. Confirmed cases is a little bit harder to confirm a case. The trafficker has to actually admit that they're being trafficked and be seeking help. You can be a suspected case and still be receiving help, but maybe not have found your way out of the life yet. So last year we serviced about 4 or 5. I say about because we're still in the process of finding more people that are connected in this circle and still working with those families into this year.
So I have not worked with anyone specifically yet, but I have here that Connecticut received 310 referrals for suspected human trafficking from DCF. That's a number from DCF. And United Services, we did receive 28 cases of suspected human trafficking last year. Again, just to reiterate what you guys were saying, I just think it's kind of wild because it's so weird. We're called the quiet corner for a reason. There's not much going on over here. So it just kind of seems outlandish to me that this was ever even a thought, a thing around here.
I think what's interesting, and this may be me being naive even at my age, but you know, when you think of trafficking, you don't necessarily think of it in this country. I mean, it's like it's something True. That you possibly think of in maybe a developing country, but clearly, you know, like everything, it is sadly everywhere. Jill, talk to us about sort of the age group that's getting trapped in this as well, because I'm guessing some of these people are pretty young.
Very young. So I have a suspected case of a 13-year-old. What has happened in our corner, if you don't mind, I'll talk specifically about what we're seeing, is that it's trafficking in the fact that the definition of trafficking, but these young girls and boys that are getting involved in it don't realize they're getting into trafficking. The grooming part of it, maybe even the exploiters don't realize that they're getting their friends into this situation. A typical situation that we see is a youth who has gotten involved with something with maybe a romantic partner, and then the romantic partner is asking more of them, but now they are finding themselves getting paid in great ways, like going to the casino. Having the casino near us is really
big part of it.
It is a very big part of it right now. But going to the casino with your friends on the weekend, and you're doing things that you know don't feel right, but at the end you have access to drugs a lot of times, that's a way to get pulled in. But then you also have access to really cool things, really fun nights out, really nice gifts, pocketbooks, clothing. And so then you go back to school, or you're posting it online about this cool weekend you had, and somebody's like, oh, I'd like to do that. Like, what are you guys doing? I want to go. And before you know it, you're involved in this. The biggest part of trafficking is once you're in the life, the shame and the guilt of it and getting out is the hardest part. So once you're involved, it takes once, and it's a struggle.
Is that therefore part of the problem of trying to help some of these individuals, because of what you've just said, is, you know, it's not easy just to find them. I know you just said that they post these things on social media, but of course you're not trawling through social media every 5 minutes. Yeah, I mean, it has to be spotted.
They're posting it. Yeah, they're posting it, but they're not posting it like, I'm at the casino being trafficked. I'm at the casino having fun.
They're not saying this 45-year-old man is taking me out to dinner. They're saying, I got this free dinner for me and my friends. You know, it's not, kind of have to dig a little bit underneath how that photo was coming to be, I guess.
Yeah.
Talk to us about, obviously, law enforcement clearly is involved in this. Before we started recording, we were having a quick chat about, you know, law enforcement, and there's a thing called HEART. Can you explain to us what that is? Because it's a sort of it's a team which involves law enforcement and agencies, correct?
It is. So DCF, along with local law enforcement and the FBI, developed a human anti-trafficking response team, so HEART team. So if you have an individual that falls within your catchment area, then you're invited to be part of the HEART team to kind of come together and put your resources together. I think it's important to note that the way that Rebecca and myself became involved in the versions that we're doing and the curriculum that we're doing is because we did go into this wanting to respond what the HEART team is developed to do. But at the same time, the response for someone that this is happening to is such a difficult road that we are going out to the the schools now to try to give some curriculum for it, mm-hmm. to try to stop it, because even sitting on the HEART team, so if you have the FBI, you have law enforcement, and you have schools, and you have parents, and you have individuals, and you have supports like Rebecca and myself sitting there, the web that is weaved by exploiters and traffickers is so deep, it's a really hard problem to get to the bottom of.
The problem is it's so insidious the way it happens. It's not just, you think trafficking, you think Taken with Liam Neeson, and that's the classic example, but it's not just getting like kidnapped. It's like kids going out for the weekend or going out for a night and coming back home, or finding multiple phones on your child, or thinking that this is what love is. And it's hard because a lot of, especially for the kiddos that we're working with and teens especially, they don't have words or the vocabulary to name this issue or things that are happening, and they may not even realize it. So if we're implementing this curriculum and giving them examples and opportunity to say, this is what's happening to me, or, oh, that's something that's similar that happened to me last year, like I didn't know. Like sometimes you just don't even know is a big, big issue.
When you go into schools, and both of you've mentioned about curriculum, how does that go down with the individuals? Because the age group you're dealing with, as you said, it's a difficult age group. You know, they're growing up, they're trying to find their place in the world, they want to experiment and try new things. And God knows, over the last 15, 20 years, with the advent of, you know, increased social media pressures and all that sort of stuff, that certainly hasn't necessarily made that helpful, but has also opened them up to these wider dangerous potentials out there. Right. So how does it go down when do they even believe it when you're talking to them about this?
So they do, honestly, because I go in there very matter of fact. So most of the age group that we can target usually is 8th grade and up. We've been invited to talk to sophomores and juniors so far, which is working out fine. Mm-hmm. The younger, the better is true. The curriculum is awesome in the fact that it's a lot of self-esteem building, a lot of knowledge about red flags. We dive very deep into each piece of vocabulary and what that actually means. A lot of scenarios that you can find yourself in that might not end in trafficking, but still help you find a safe way to get out of it. We do a lot of safety planning. We do a lot of defining what a healthy relationship is and how that can go south, even if it starts healthy. And what are the red flags that before you know it, you end up in an unhealthy relationship, and how to get out of that and what you can do. Lots of safety planning. Also, Rebecca and I had both decided before we start going into schools and teaching this to kids, we really want to have a parents' night before. Right. It's not required of us through Not a Number, but we really believe that educating the parents more before the kids are coming home with this heavy topic is a benefit, right? We want to have the right response, because if they're saying something to you, chances are that might be your one and only chance that they tell you in a fleeting moment of what's going to happen. Yes, the kids, they can give us a run for our money. I mean, they will tell us, like, we've had them tell us, really, you come in here and you think you can just write it on a board and like it's that easy. And it's like, right. No, not at all. Like, we've had people call us out, and I believe Rebecca as well, like, relish that. Like, let's really dive into it. The schools have been great in letting us come in and do that and talk about this difficult situation. But I would say the kids are really receptive. I'm very happy with the way they're taking it.
Mm-hmm. We got more response than I think we thought we would. And we've gotten varied responses, like Jill is saying. We've had some outbursts or some talk about past trauma, things like that. After like the first like introduction class, it kind of gets, it's real when we go in and we say why we're there. But as we get going and keep coming back, there's more and more layers that come apart with our kiddos. And yeah,
every school that we will go into, we have a case that we know has been in that school. So I can walk in. So we walked into this last one, and I walked in and I said, I am here because I know that some of your classmates are struggling with this. I know some of your classmates have been involved in this, and I know what the repercussions can be, and that's why I'm here. So it's not like walking in and saying, oh, I just want to teach you something. It's like, no, I'm here because this is really a problem and I know it's happening. And then we've had to remind them halfway through, like, really, why are you making us do this? Because I know what's happening here. Remember, there's many scenarios that we talk about, and I'm like, here's one of the scenarios I've heard about when kids have come before me. Here's another scenario. So
Can you give us an idea of a scenario? This is part of the whole point of this interview, is so that listeners can understand these types of situations? Obviously, we can't cover every one, but can you give us like a scenario at all?
I can give the scenario that we happen to see the most. Yeah. Really, it happens two ways, mostly around here. Cross our fingers that it just stays these two ways, because there's a lot of ways. Through the internet, meeting somebody that you think you know that you don't know, right? So we'll actually read through a scenario with the kiddos and ask them to tell us what red flags they're seeing throughout this. It takes very short amount of time for an exploiter to find your vulnerabilities. We're all vulnerable in being humans, right? But if we're talking to somebody online, we feel this sense of almost like protection to be able to be more open. Like,
right.
I just got done having a fight with my parents. They don't understand me. Oh, how come your parents don't understand you? I understand you. And then it continues on from there and happens very slowly. The patience of an exploiter is amazing. They will groom you and they will can be very patient and then keep going back to your vulnerability and playing on that and feeding that in a way. Then we have the other one that we've had is a lot of times where I mentioned, I think before a little bit about kiddos that get involved in it and they think this is cool. Like, I have a boyfriend. I have three phones. I have a Louis. I have the stress. Like, yeah, you want it too? Like, yeah, come with me. You know,
right. And this is what I mean when I say insidious, because often when that's happening, they think they're helping their friend out. They're not thinking, oh, I'm essentially being a pimp, or it doesn't look the way we think it would. So they're like, oh, I know my friend's tight on money. I know their family's struggling or something. Come out with me this weekend to my older boyfriend's casino party or something like that. It's not as obvious as we would think, but they're coming from a place of this is good. They don't quite realize.
I've done many parent presentations. I've been lucky enough to be able to be invited into the community to do presentations. And I'm always amazed at how many times people are saying to me, but we don't really go to truck stops. Like, I don't even let my daughter go into the bathroom alone at a truck stop. I'm like, okay. And then it like takes me right. a second to realize I'm like, oh, that's what people are thinking. That's what they're thinking is happening with the trafficking. And that's where they think it begins. It's in your own home. It's with your kids on their computer or their kids talking to their friends.
I think a huge like issue for our area especially is because we are the quiet corner. There's like not a lot to do after school and kids are just making friends online or playing games all day online, and that's how they're meeting people. Probably less likely if they're going to the roller rink with a group of their friends from school or whatever kids do nowadays, yeah, right. but right. they're not. There's not a lot to do around here.
We're the quiet corner with 395-95 connection to New York City, mm-hmm. Worcester, Boston. Like, we are within, I never had this as a child myself, but where I'm sitting at an intake and I'm like, well, what'd you do last weekend? Went to New York with a few of my friends. Like, like, how'd you get there? We Ubered. I just don't even fathom that as a 15-year-old kid hopping in an Uber and going down to New York for the weekend. So
we spoke earlier as well. Obviously, they can get involved in drug use as well. But what about violence? I mean, you know, is that a big issue? And that in itself, if they are being violated in that way, it possibly is going to make them go in on themselves even more. Does that make that harder?
It definitely does. The violence that follows comes a lot from like a relationship that you already had before, right? That was already an unhealthy relationship. So we really talk a lot about that. The violence part like would be from like the movies you see and stuff like that. I have not seen a lot of that in the cases that I'm helping out with right now. It really is the friends and the connections online and things like that, and a lot of drug use behind it. But yes, the violence is
often so the violence is an issue often to keep you compliant. That's what will happen. But it's also, I think we'll probably see more, it's called sextortion, and it's basically you're talking to someone online, someone you think you can trust, you send a nude or an intimate photo, and then they want more, and they want more, and they want more. And if you don't, they're going to send it to your friends, they're going to send it to your family, and the whole online aspect, sometimes we're not the safest online, so internet safety is a portion we go over, because even on Snapchat, they can, your location's on a map, unless you turn it off. But if you don't know to turn that off, they can see that. So they know how to threaten you in ways that make you continue to work for them.
And I'm guessing as well, I mean, again, both of you mentioned at the top of the interview, it's not just girls, it's boys as well.
Yeah.
I'm guessing the LGBTQ plus community is also targeted. And if you sort of like resonate resonate with that, then that becomes another whole big other issue, I'm guessing, as well, especially if you're not out and then they start using that against you.
Exactly. Yes, we even have scenarios on that we read with the kids. All of the scenarios that we read are true stories. They just change the names in them. But yes, the LGBTQ plus community in general has higher numbers than anywhere else. If you're talking about vulnerabilities and things like that and ways for them to play in on you, you're exactly right. That's another way for them to find their way in.
For sure. In the gender component, like you brought up, it's harder a lot of the times for boys to come through, because as we see in like one of the stories we go through, often boys are expected to like want it, right? So why are you complaining? Things like that. Even though if it was a girl, we wouldn't be saying that, right? So there's a lot of shame going along with that too.
We've been so lucky. So we should mention that it was just last year that we started noticing that this was a real problem. And then in the past year, we were able to have this wonderful community come around us and start giving us funding to be able to do these kind of things and to do this education. So we had gotten money from the community foundation. We have gotten money from private donors just to help us try to fight this. Just getting the word out more, like you're helping us do, is what we need to do. The more people that are educated about it,
the more we talk about it.
Yeah.
Having at least the conversation started.
Yeah. And we were saying before we started this interview that it is a difficult conversation to have. It's a difficult conversation to hear as well. To both of you, as I said, we've only just scratched the surface. And thank you for sharing with us some of the details of this very difficult work that you're both doing. But thank God that, you are both there and your organizations. Perhaps we can just leave people with some details if they are in that situation, how they can reach out if they want to get in contact or they need assistance.
Sure, yeah. So if you want to report suspected trafficking, you can call your local police department or the DCF Caroline at 800-842-2288. And the National Trafficking Hotline is 888-373-7888. Or you can text to 233-733. And I just wanted to say, sorry, at United Services, we have a mental health hotline as well, if that's a more comfortable route for people to get services. And that's 24/7. It's 860-774-2020. And we have the area's only DV domestic violence hotline. That's also 24/7. You can call 888-774-2900 for that.
Well, Jill Burbo and Rebecca Taser, thank you again, as I say, for talking us through a subject which many would rather not obviously have that discussion. But as we said, it is an important one, and it's about time that the light was shone on that a lot more to help you and obviously ultimately to help those young people out there. Thanks ever so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you so much.
Connecticut East This Week is made possible by Newport Mansions, as seen on HBO's The Gilded Age. Newport Mansions preserves and protects 11 historic properties and landscapes in Newport, Rhode Island, exemplifying three centuries of achievements in American architecture, decorative arts, and landscape design. Plan your visit this year and attend some of the mansion's signature events, including the Newport Flower Show, June 21st to 23rd, Newport Mansions Wine and Food Festival, September 20th to 22nd, and holidays at the Newport Mansions, November 23rd to January 1st. Tickets and information at newportmansions.org. And
SCAD, the Southeastern Council on Alcoholism and Drug Dependence, is looking for licensed clinicians and is offering the top benefits packages in the state. Go to licensedclinicians.org to learn more. That's licensedclinicians.org.
When your home or business is damaged by fire, water, or mold, you just want things to go back to normal fast. That's why Service Master by Mason is available 24/7. Their certified technicians have been restoring homes and businesses from disasters or even helping with specialty cleaning needs for over 30 years. You can rely on Service Master by Mason for everything from fire, smoke, and water damage to mold or a lingering odor. Call today at 860-455-1249 or visit servicemasterbymason.com.
Time now for a look at other stories making the headlines this week. Governor Lamont was the keynote speaker at a legislative lunch in southeastern Connecticut recently, organized by the Chamber of Commerce of Eastern Connecticut. The lunches are part of a statewide tour by the governor as he updates local, municipal, and business leaders on what his administration has been up to over the past year. Lamont touched on successes like historic house building in the region and employment, but also didn't shy away from issues that he said concern him.
This is probably in the case of electricity and energy, because our Our workforce is pretty competitive. Our taxes are more competitive, but our electricity is expensive, and electricity is a bigger and bigger piece of making a submarine an F-35, so I've got to work on that.
Lamont acknowledged State Pier in New London, which has become a hub for the new offshore wind business, creating renewable energy, and said he's also looking at hydropower from Canada and maintaining the state's only nuclear power station, Millstone, as part of a carbon-free energy collective. He also talked about his priorities as the short legislative session comes to a close on May 8th.
We're going to keep that budget in place so the second half of the biennium stays. And we've got about $350 million of ARPA money, which is the federal money. It's one-time money. It has to be committed by the end of this year. So that's what we're discussing with the legislature. What are their priorities for that money? I know higher ed and I know not-for-profits are a big part of those priorities. So they will see some extra resources coming.
Lamont told the attending audience that he felt the state was doing pretty well because of fiscal guardrails he's put in place. United Way of Southeastern Connecticut kicked off their first childcare workforce shortage work group recently. The series of work groups has come about after a recent survey found that New London County is at crisis point when it comes to childcare options available to residents. According to figures curated by the Connecticut Project, New London County has a 52% shortfall between demand and capacity for pre-K childcare, and that percentage jumps to 62% for infant and toddler care. The work groups are made up of childcare providers, local nonprofits, foundations, and educational institutions. Dina Sears Graves is the president and CEO of United Way Southeastern Connecticut and said they're looking at many innovative ways to try and solve the problem. One way is to create what are called childcare business incubators that are startup companies for people wanting to have their own childcare business.
Not only are we opening spots for children so they have slots for childcare, but we're actually empowering people to start businesses. And so for me, the incubator kind of is twofold. I can't wait to see what that will bring to our community. It's one solution. It won't solve the problem, but we're going to need multiple approaches similar to the incubators. But just being allowed to do it in this area is really, I'm excited for that.
Scott Umbel is the Vice President of Community Impact at United Way of Southeastern Connecticut and said it wasn't until they saw the survey figures on paper they realized just how bad the situation has become.
It's not affecting one community or one block or one demographic. It's anyone that wants to work that likely needs to have their kids somewhere that's safe but also quality care. So it's the childcare providers that need the staff. It's the employers that can't hire because there is nowhere for their employees to put their kids. And it's the employees, the folks in our community, both in, above, and well beyond poverty levels that still can't get to work because they don't have this. So the crisis word, I don't think is overused in this situation.
The work group agreed there was a need for more childcare providers, but also said other key issues were increased pay, as well as increased benefits for workers who would lose existing benefits they rely on if they receive pay increases alone, plus the need for retention and recognition of existing staff to make sure they are not alienated by changes that don't assist them in their current childcare jobs. The group also recognized that job descriptions needed to be realistic about what a childcare provider job actually involved, not just on paper, but in reality, saying they had lost many potential employees in this way. And if you're thinking of flying later this year, getting your money back if your flight gets delayed or cancelled is about to get easier, as Connecticut Senator Richard Blumenthal and Attorney General William Tong unveiled new airline rules that provide travelers with more protections. The U.S. Department of Transportation has signed a memorandum of understanding with various state attorney generals, giving them more powers to deal with airline passenger disputes. Tong explained some of the new rules airlines will have to adhere to.
There's now a DOT refund rule. So if you're unreasonably delayed or your flight is canceled, you're entitled to an automatic refund. So for domestic flights, that's a delay of more than 3 hours. For international flights, a delay of more than 6 hours. And also, because we've done a lot together on junk fees, the airlines and ticket agents to disclose all fees up front.
Blumenthal said the new rules come into effect just in time for the summer travel season when more people choose to fly, but airlines don't increase the number of flights and planes that are available, but do increase their prices. The new rules come into effect on June 25th this year. That's all from us for this edition. Do send us your questions and story ideas to the show via our website at Connecticut-East.com or Facebook or Twitter at Connecticut East and on Instagram at Connecticut East This Week. And you can listen to the show again on our social platforms, on demand, and by asking your smart speaker to play Connecticut East This Week podcast. And please like, follow, and share on your social media too. I'm Brian Scott Smith. Thank you for listening.